Okay, so continuing with the readings on the five hindrances, and just sort of doing a recap of the hindrances. Pictura Sutta for sloth and torpor. Of course, it's the very well-known one of to Moggallana, and most people will have read it or heard about it, but there's only about half of it that is usually referred to, and then there's a whole other another half after that where the Buddha is giving advice to Moggallana, and in how living the holy life, and then as a particular perspective on insight as well. So this is Anguttara 7, Sutta number 61. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Bhaggas at Sungsumaragira in the deer park at Besakala Grove. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Mahamoggallana was sitting and dozing at Kalawala Muttagama among the Magadans. With the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, the Blessed One saw the Venerable Mahamoggallana sitting and dozing. Then, just as a strong man might extend his drawn-in arm or draw in his extended arm, the Blessed One disappeared from the deer park at Besakala Grove and reappeared before the Venerable Mahamoggallana. The Blessed One sat down on the seat that was prepared for him and said, "Are you dozing, Moggallana? Are you dozing, Moggallana?" There's something about the original, the old translation that has "Nodest thou, Moggallana?" This in modern English doesn't quite capture. Yes, Bhante. "But therefore, Moggallana, you should not attend to or cultivate the object that you are attending to when you became drowsy. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should ponder, examine, and mentally inspect the Dhamma as you have heard it and learned it. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should recite in detail the Dhamma as you have heard it and learned it. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should pull both ears and rub your limbs with your hands. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should get up from your seat, rub your eyes with water, survey all the quarters, and look up at the constellations and stars. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should attend to the perception of light. You should undertake the perception of day thus: as by day, so at night; as at night, so by day. Thus, with a mind that is open and uncovered, you should develop a mind imbued with luminosity. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should undertake the exercise of walking back and forth, perceiving what is behind you and what is in front, with your sense faculties drawn in and your mind collected. By such means, it is possible that your drowsiness will be abandoned. But if you cannot abandon your drowsiness in such a way, you should lie down on the right side in the lion's posture with one foot overlapping the other, mindful and clearly comprehending, after noting in your mind the idea of rising. When you awaken, you should get up quickly, thinking. I will not be intent on the pleasure of rest, the pleasure of sloth, the pleasure of sleep. It is in this way, Moggallana, that you should train yourself. Therefore, Moggallana, you should train yourself thus. We will not approach families for alms with a head swollen with pride. It is in this way, Moggallana, that you should train yourself. It may be, Moggallana, that a bhikkhu approaches families with a head swollen with pride. Now there are chores to be done in the families, and for this reason, when a bhikkhu turns up, people may not pay attention to him. In such a case, the bhikkhu might think, who has turned his family against me? It seems these people have now become indifferent toward me. In this way, through lack of gain, one feels humiliated. When feeling humiliated, one becomes restless. When one is restless, one loses one's restraint. The mind of one without restraint is far from concentration. Therefore, Moggallana, you should train yourself thus. We will not engage in contentious talk. It is in this way that you should train yourself. When there is contentious talk, an excess of words can be expected. When there is an excess of words, one becomes restless. When one is restless, one loses one's restraint. The mind of one without restraint is far from concentration. Moggallana, I do not praise bonding with everyone whatsoever, nor do I praise bonding with no one at all. I do not praise bonding with householders and monastics, but I do praise bonding with quiet and noiseless lodgings, far from the flurry of people, remote from human habitation, and suitable for seclusion. When this was said, the Venerable Maha Moggallana said to the Blessed One, briefly, Bhante, how is a bhikkhu liberated in the extinction of craving, best among devas and humans? One who has reached the ultimate conclusion, won ultimate security from bondage, lived the ultimate spiritual life, and gained the ultimate consummation. Here, Moggallana, a bhikkhu has heard, nothing is worth holding on to. When a bhikkhu has heard, nothing is worth holding on to, he directly knows all things. Having directly known all things, he fully understands all things. Having fully understood all things, whatever feeling he feels, whether pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, he dwells contemplating impermanence in those feelings, contemplating fading away in those feelings, contemplating cessation in those feelings, contemplating relinquishment in those feelings. As he dwells contemplating impermanence, fading away, cessation, relinquishment in those feelings, he does not cling to anything in the world. Not clinging, he is not agitated. Being unagitated, he personally attains nibbana. He understands, destroyed is birth, the spiritual life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more coming back to any state of being. Briefly, Moggallana, it is in this way that a bhikkhu is best among devas and humans, one who has reached the ultimate conclusion, won ultimate security from bondage, lived the ultimate spiritual life, and gained the ultimate consummation. That, as I said, that the last bit of the sutta, last half of the sutta is rarely in any, most anthologies, it's rarely included, you rarely come across it. So that those the advice in terms of living the training, how one relates to families, to people, alms, relationship to the lay community as a monastic, that sense of not. Establishing oneself in humility and simplicity, contentedness, refraining from contentious talk, and both of those are sort of the aiming at that quality of restraint. So that, and the Buddha emphasizing at the end, the mind of one without restraint is far from concentration. So that establishing restraint in one's relating to to others and then in terms of speech and conversation. And then the Buddha emphasizing that he doesn't, he says, don't praise bonding with everyone whatsoever, in the sense of having to establish contact and connection with everybody, or having to shun everybody. But in particular, if one's going to really establish a bond with anything, make a bond with a quiet, secluded dwelling place. The Buddha, or Moggallana, asking for a brief exposition of the Dhamma, or sort of the essence of the Dhamma, and that that nothing is worth holding on to, as the Buddha saying that nothing in sambhe dhamma nalang abhiniwesaya, and it's translated in different ways. Nothing is worth holding on to is actually, I think, is a nice translation. Nothing is worth adhering to is sometimes it's a bit of a curious word, adhering to. So, but it's that sense of clinging and attachment is the essence of that. So that sense of that undermining attachment and emphasizing that relinquishment and letting go, and then that the Buddha then emphasizing the that reflecting in that way, understanding in that way, recognizing, and it's interesting that the Buddha directs to the aspect of feeling, sense of pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neither pleasant nor painful nor pleasant, a neutral feeling, and then that contemplating impermanence in those feelings, contemplating fading away, contemplating cessation, contemplating relinquishment, which is the same structure as in the Anapanasati Sutta, contemplating anicca, viraga, niroda, vosaka, patinisaka. So that relinquishment and fading away, relinquishment, fading away, viraga is also can be translated dispassion, cessation, niroda, patinisaka as relinquishment, but particularly around those relinquishment of feelings of self and identification. So an avenue for directly realizing an end to clinging and entering into cessation of dukkha. Any questions?
It's striking the first part, how similar it is to the beginning of the Metta Sutta.
To the Metta Sutta?
Yes. Contentment to the holding of. Holding of contentment.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Just being pregnant, being humble around that family and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that's that sense of both in terms of trying to one worrying about gain and also kind of position, self-perception. All of that is means of just creating more restlessness and complication in the mind. Yeah.
You were mentioning highlighting a bit about the Buddha's focusing on feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Letting go. And I was just wondering if you had any words on how to discern neutral feeling. Because neutral people are kind of obvious.
Right. Well, I think one of the things is actually recognizing that when what it tends to elicit the different feelings, so that pleasant feeling tends to elicit desire, greed, okay? Unpleasant feeling tends to elicit aversion. Neutral feeling tends to elicit delusion, moha, so that your direct counter to moha is always mindfulness, right? So that establishing of mindfulness. And then, once you start establishing that quality of attention, and also the patience plays a big role in the sense of the mind that is willing to patiently be present with a feeling, because in reality, the vast majority of our feelings are neutral, and the arousing of energy and the application of patience are very important qualities for the recognition and sustaining of attention towards the neutral feeling, and that's a skill that we have to be cultivating in our meditation, because especially just in normal circumstances, the majority of what we experience is already neutral. But then as we meditate, then of course it's even more so. So then the natural inclination of the untrained mind is then to drift into moha, into delusion, into cloudedness, and oftentimes restlessness is just to get out a neutral feeling, or even desire and aversion are oftentimes just, they're responses to neutral feeling, in the sense that one doesn't have the patience or the eliciting of effort required to sustain attention. So the mind looks for something else to do, looks for something else to absorb into, so then it gets trapped in some kind of memory or association that it can then sink its teeth into something more substantial, which is desire and aversion usually. So then that is or then it sinks into kind of delusion, drowsiness, and dullness. So I think that's actually, that's maybe a really important aspect of this sutta, in that the Buddha is originally giving instruction to Moggallana in terms of overcoming of the dullness and drowsiness, and then with that in mind, and this is extrapolation, but with that in mind, that attention to feeling is a necessary means of being able to overcome dullness and drowsiness in a very tangible way. So then but with neutral feeling, of course, it does. Yeah, it requires a an application of effort and patience to be present. And so like, and that's where that lifting up of investigations, lifting up of attention to impermanence, just really lifting up that investigative mind, that requires the mind to track a particular feeling and recognizing its impermanence. Yeah.
So I was yesterday afternoon, I was noticing my meditation when I was able to just kind of watch thoughts and they stopped pretty much arising, and they were just like, they were just kind of be there. There would be this kind of sense of the surface of the thought that's going on for quite a while, but it's just, you know, thinking. And then there was just this kind of underlying restlessness or something underneath there, like wanting something more. Mm-hmm. And this sort of also conscious, like, this is it.
Yeah.
This is peace. where's the, why are we dissatisfied? So I kept trying to look at that restlessness.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got cold and I kind of was like, putting on cold. Just paying attention to that. And then I went back to my PD and started writing my journal and got distracted. And I just was really contemplating this, why is it that, this is what it's about, this kind of paying attention and peace that's arising and just watching this experience. And then there's always this pulling away from it, or this, mm-hmm. or that kind of the restlessness that comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there can't just be stillness.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to, is it just kind of continuing to keep working with watching that restlessness, watching that kind of distractibility from?
That's what I found is particularly investigation of the sense of, like, the attachment to identification with the restlessness, because there's something that is, at least it's solid. Whereas to let the mind become peaceful is all of a sudden it's not very solid anymore. And you realize what a threat to the sense of self peacefulness is. And to be able to investigate it from that perspective of, relinquishing of that sense of I and the sense of self and the identification with me and my thoughts, me and my agenda, me and my necessity of having to be counted all the time, and then developing a familiarity and a sense that this is where contentment what can it be? Can I just be content with this? I'm sort of contentment patience as well in that sense. Can I just be content and patient with this particular feeling? And it isn't sort of like, I'm going to be content and patient with this for an hour or 2 hours or whatever, but it's sort of like, with this particular feeling this year, can I just be content and patient with this? What's the obstacle to that? And then relinquishing into that. And that's where that working with contentment and patience, working with that quality of relinquishment. And that's where I think that it's really skillful, that set of dhammas of impermanence, dispassion, cessation, and relinquishment. Those are really skillful tools for working with thought, with feeling, with the associations and memory. So recognizing their impermanence and developing that quality of of one recognizing its fading, but then also the a more proactive type of dispassion, and of course attending to the quality of cessation and ending. And then experimenting and with that quality of relinquishment, letting go, and it isn't as if it's one decides to let go and then you let go. It's just it's a tool to work with, and then to see the one sometimes recognize the feeling of coolness and settledness and contentment that does arise with relinquishment and letting go. But then also on the other side, with relinquishing and letting go, the feeling of desperation and agitation that can come from that. You know, my God, what's going to happen to me if I actually let go? What's going to happen if I don't have this thought anymore? And you know, which is fine, you know, in the sense, because you're exploring that edge of the application of Dhamma, and then seeing how the mind reacts, and you're starting to understand the nature of the mind more clearly, so that it's. But those tools are important. It's not just sort of and using them in conjunction, because it's not just knocking the thoughts out with relinquishment, but it's like you're working with it and trying to understand more clearly how that tends to agitate the mind, or how that restlessness. And that's where the sense of viraka, of dispassion, is really, really helpful. Dispassion, disenchantment, seeing that kind of restless quality of the mind that will not let go, will not put something down, and not in terms of aversion, but sort of saying, you know, that, but it's worthy of something that's really worthy of dispassion and disenchantment. That this is an obstacle, but not seeing it as a personal thing, but seeing that's really an obstacle to peace, and so that it's seen as a Dhamma, and again, this is really important, because the whole kind of rubric of the Dhamma and Upasana is seeing things as phenomena as opposed to personal attributes.